little thought to integrating the new practices into the daily working of the business or operation. These efforts seek to inspire, assuming that the epiphany will generate the momentum required to counteract the gravitational pull of current practices and status quo thinking. But there is a short shelf life on inspiration without action. While introducing ideas and generating conversation is a good start, it doesn't go far enough. It is much like when a patient begins taking a prescribed course of antibiotics and fails to complete the full course of treatment, thus running the risk that the bacteria will survive, mutate, and become resistant. Similarly, incomplete attempts to introduce a new culture can not only fail to produce results, but can also cause residual resentment that can become resistant to future initiatives. A rapidly growing software company became intrigued with multipliers as a key to their growth, innovation, and talent retention strategy. Managers were asked to read the book and injected its concepts into their management and new hire training programs. Quickly, talk of multipliers, diminishers, and accidental diminishers was heard in the halls of the workspace and between the walls of the conference rooms. Known diminishers were exposed and would-be multipliers were inspired. However, when the company hit a few bumps on their growth curve, many managers retreated to their default style, not because it was better, but simply because it was easier. As the company returned to steady growth, they realized that they had lost sight of their aspirations. Today, they are regrouping and recommitting to build and sustain a true multiplier culture. This time, they aren't just starting a conversation. They are building deep internal capability to teach the ideas and integrate them into their talent and performance management practices. Building a culture is neither a one-time injection nor a sheep dip. It requires connection to the deep layers of the culture. It necessitates going from surface-level cultural elements to affect the deeper cultural elements. Starting at the top level, common language, then learned behavior, then down to shared beliefs and heroes and legends, and eventually down deep to rituals and norms. Engaging in the surface-level practices is like dipping your toe in a pool of water, feeling the temperature of the water but skimming the surface. As your organization engages in the deeper practices, surface-level insights become deeply embedded beliefs, and new behaviors are routinized into standard operating practices. When new ideas become new norms, you have cultivated a sustainable culture. Building deep culture. How do you create new norms? This section offers a set of practices that will assist you in building the essential elements of culture, starting from surface-level elements like creating a shared language, to deeper practices such as integrating multiplier behaviors into manager assessment and hiring practices. Each practice is illustrated with an example of how one company is putting this strategy to work. In most cases, these companies are deploying a number of practices. However, only a small sample of the larger work they're engaged in is highlighted. 10 practices to build a multiplier culture. For the cultural element, common language, the multiplier practices are: number 1, hold a book talk. Number 2, discuss accidental diminishers. For the cultural element, learned behavior, the multiplier practices are: number 3, introduce multiplier mindsets. Number 4, teach multiplier skills. Number 5, fuse multipliers with daily decisions. For the cultural element, shared beliefs, the multiplier practice is: number 6, codify a leadership ethos. For the cultural element, heroes and legends, the multiplier practices are: number 7, spotlight multiplier moments. Number 8, measure managers. For the cultural element, rituals and norms, the multiplier practices are: number 9, pilot a multiplier practice. Number 10, integrate practices with business metrics. Common language. When a group shares a common vocabulary, They can more easily name desirable and undesirable behaviors that would otherwise be slippery or invisible. Many leadership models name desirable behaviors, but fail to spark discussion about undesirable behaviors. Having a common vocabulary gives people the chance to talk about diminishing, which is a discussion that all too often exists only in shrouded conversations and hushed tones. To strengthen a culture, create a safe space for people to talk about leadership, not just in theoretical, aspirational terms, but also in real daily experiences and interactions. Use either of the following two practices to help people name and express what is working and not working for them and their colleagues. Practice 1. Hold the book talk. Ryan Sanders, the COO of Bamboo HR, a rapidly growing software-as-a-service company, introduced multipliers to his company. He went in highly cognizant of two principles that he learned from managing triple-digit growth. First, underperformers could easily hide in high-growth companies. Second, bad management and lack of leadership development compound the problem. He began his leadership development efforts by having his senior leadership team read this book and discuss the need for multiplier leadership across their growing business in a series of weekly staff meetings. Practice number 2. Discuss accidental diminishers. In addition to discussing the ideas in the book, the senior leaders at Bamboo HR each took the accidental diminisher quiz and compared their self-assessments. The conversations were real and vulnerable, with team members confronting each other's behaviors and lauding their multiplier moments. Tears weren't uncommon. While many companies start the dialogue, this management team kept it going, creating a comfortable space to call each other out on diminishing behaviors and working together to replace those behaviors with multiplier practices. Their collective point of view allowed them to lead a cultural transformation and increase their retention of top talent. Most important, the conversation continues within all ranks of the company. Learned behavior. When we watch our boss or another successful leader micromanaging in high-stakes situations, we are learning appropriate behavior and are likely to default to this behavior when presented with a similar situation. The behavior becomes naturalized or unconscious. To acquire a set of new learned behaviors, people must move from unaware diminisher to automatic multiplier. Initially, people need to discover the downside of an old negative behavior. Once they understand the downside, they need to learn to spot the triggers, the situations that bait and activate diminishing responses. Once they've been introduced to new multiplier behaviors, they need to experiment with those behaviors and experience success. However, to make this behavior permanent, our response to the stimulus needs to become habituated or automatic. The following practices can help managers unlearn diminishing behaviors and spot opportunities to replace them with multiplier practices. Practice number 3. Introduce multiplier mindsets. Mike Felix, the leader described earlier, wasn't an anomaly. His actions were part of a larger movement across AT&T. As employees of a large company know, it's easy to be underutilized inside big companies, becoming lost in red tape, political silos, and corporate structure. In AT&T's quest to become the world's premier integrated communication company, they needed a better way to tap into the intelligence inside the company and to create a culture of trust and transparency where people could speak up. And they needed a fresh and efficient way to reach more than 100,000 leaders. AT&T began their efforts to flatten the hierarchy by starting at the top. Under the direction of their CEO, AT&T University held a series of seminars for the 150 company officers. The seminars introduced the multipliers' mindsets and practices and prompted conversation among the senior leaders, not about what they wanted leaders below them to do, as is all too common inside corporations, but about their own vulnerabilities as accidental diminishers. The new framework became a powerful lens to view how leaders with positive intent could have negative effects and how hidden mindsets shape both action and outcome. As senior officers experimented with multiplier practices, others in the organization took notice, witnessing how seemingly small shifts in behavior could have a major impact. For example, Brooks McCorkle, the president of AT&T Partner Solutions, had such a positive experience with playing fewer chips that managers throughout her team began trying their hand with the exercise. While AT&T's effort began at the top of the organization, it didn't stop there. AT&T University distributed a copy of the book to all 6,700 general managers and then held a multipliers webinar viewed by over 125,000 leaders worldwide, roughly 46% of their overall employee population. Along with the webinar came a 48-page discussion guide encouraging managers to convert ideas into daily business practices. While the effort certainly hasn't eradicated all diminishing behavior or all diminishers, it has established a collective ambition and introduced ways of working that are reducing hesitation and dismantling hierarchy. Employees are more likely to hear their managers asking questions, listening, and saying things such as, "There's no one right answer here," or "What's on your mind?" or "Let's jump on a call and debate this." One senior leader made a point of giving his more junior managers greater access to company officers, who often get shielded from ideas in process. The junior managers, sensing the trust being placed in them, put more rigor into their thinking, not less. But they also weren't afraid to suggest something seemingly outrageous. The senior leader said, "This flatter, more collaborative style is a much faster operating model." People also feel greater permission to call out well-intentioned, yet diminishing behaviors. For example, when an overly eager colleague was dominating a conversation, someone else jumped in with a lighthearted, "Whoa, slow down, cowboy." The message was sent quickly and humorously rather than festering or getting cued for inclusion in an annual performance review. Just as we saw with Mike Felix's organization, when managers learn to recognize the triggers for diminishing behavior and turn these into multiplier moments, the multiplier way of leading becomes normalized. Practice number 4, teach multiplier skills. To develop the talent and innovation necessary to transform from a commodity-based business to a specialty chemical company, Eastman Chemical held a series of immersive 2-day leadership workshops under the direction of Mark Hecht, a seasoned executive coach inside the company. The workshops introduced the multipliers framework and taught only the multiplier practices that supported their business objectives. In addition to teaching skills, they utilized a 360-degree assessment to provide data to enable the leaders to recognize their blind spots and monitor their progress. Some leaders took it a step further in skill development by adding multiplier moments to their natural team meeting agenda to assist leaders in sharing pivotal moments when they could turn diminishing actions into opportunities to magnify the best in their employees. Practice number 5, fuse multipliers with daily decisions. The multipliers framework fit nicely with Intuit's business values, but the company wanted to ensure that ideas would translate from training room scenarios to real-time business decisions in the leader's daily practice. Instead of just teaching skills, they used a business leadership simulation from the consulting firm BTS. In the simulation, teams managed a fictitious business modeled after Intuit and faced a series of strategic and tactical decisions wherein they had to choose the actions that would both deliver the desired business results while simultaneously utilizing and multiplying the company talent. As the teams played through the simulation, leaders learned how to approach the most difficult business problems with a multiplier mindset and behaviors. When they were faced with similar business decisions back on the job, they understood the trade-offs and were prepared to lead as a multiplier. Shared beliefs. In a strong culture, people not only share a set of beliefs about what is true, they also share a set of assumptions about how the world works. The peaks and perimeters are clearly defined. Members know what conduct earns someone hero status and what conduct gets someone kicked out of the tribe. In a multiplier culture, there is clarity on what constitutes good leadership, and people who behave in ways that are congruent with the leadership ethos rise to the top. Each time people who uphold the beliefs are rewarded, the culture is strengthened. Likewise, every time diminishing behavior is overlooked, that culture is diluted. To build a strong culture, define the core beliefs about leadership and ensure those beliefs are validated more frequently than they are violated. Practice number 6, codify a leadership ethos. In 2011, Nike, the global athletic powerhouse, was bolstering their efforts to build a strong, sustaining management culture. The company analyzed the leadership required to support their global growth and established a manager manifesto, a code from CEO Mark Parker that defined the purpose and standards of excellence for managers across Nike. With the concept of multipliers as a cornerstone, this code defined Nike's expectations for managers. Managers who extract and extend the genius of others get vastly more from their people. They are a force to multiply team performance and fuel business growth through leading, coaching, driving, and inspiring their teams. This manifesto sounded a clarion call to all managers. Your job is to unleash the full potential of each person on your team. Heroes and legends. Individuals who embody sought-after leadership values can be powerful role models, propelling hopeful or even reluctant managers forward. Not only can these leaders have a contagious effect on the organization, they can become cultural legends, leaving a lasting imprint long after they've left the organization. The heroes in a multiplier culture might be those truly inspiring leaders who exemplify multiplier mindsets and practices. However, your most powerful role models just might be the aspiring multipliers, the leaders who earnestly seek to understand and confront their own diminishing ways. Don Cunningham is a leader who's become legendary at 3M. After attending the 3M Amplify program, Don, who runs the customer insights function, embarked on a mission to redeem herself from her accidental diminisher tendencies, even phoning former colleagues to apologize for past actions that she now understood to be diminishing. She made such an impression on her colleagues that she was invited to speak to the company's top 100 executives. Courageously, she shared her self-assessment and challenged the top executives to consider how their best intentions might be stifling the innovation they so earnestly sought. Practice number 7. Spotlight multiplier moments. When Casey Lenner, Senior Director of Design Operations at Nike, won the Multiplier of the Year contest in 2012, Nike went all out. The company made an internal announcement and held an award ceremony at company headquarters, during which Lenner's staff spoke ebulliently about working for her. One said, "She believes we are capable, so we believe we are capable." Following the tribute, her colleagues presented her with a custom pair of sneakers designed and produced in her honor. You don't need to wait until someone from your company earns an award. You can spotlight leaders inside your company for exemplifying multiplier leadership. Make heroes out of these genius makers who bring out the best in others. Practice number 8. Measure managers. Companies can reinforce multiplier practices by periodically but regularly assessing how well managers incorporate multiplier behaviors into their daily leadership practices. After all, as the adage goes, what gets measured gets done. Some companies use the multiplier's 360-degree assessment as one of a suite of management assessments. Other companies incorporate these behaviors into their existing management assessments. For example, Nike invites employees to rate their managers once a year against a set of 8 habits of winning managers based on the multiplier's practices. NBN, an Australian broadband network provider, mapped the multiplier practices to their core leadership competencies and used a 180-degree assessment tool to measure their managers. This data is not only incorporated into their mid-year performance reviews, but also aggregated into a company-wide heat map revealing the collective strengths and vulnerabilities of their leaders. Rituals and norms. The multiplier way of leading becomes institutionalized as you integrate its disciplines into the operational practices of the organization, such as performance management, talent planning, and financial incentives. What was once experimental, and perhaps even went against the grain, becomes an integral part of the fabric of the organization. The following two practices can normalize once novel ideas. Practice number 9, pilot a multiplier practice. Chris Fry, formerly the Senior Vice President of Product Development at Salesforce, held a 2-day multipliers workshop for his management team. At the conclusion of the workshop, Chris suggested his team focus their efforts by putting just a single idea into practice. He offered this challenge to the group. I want us to get 1% better across the whole team. Aiming to promote free movement and growth of talent inside the company, the team focused on the talent magnet discipline. They established a guiding principle. It should be easier to transfer inside the company than to pursue an opportunity outside the company. They sketched out a new transfer policy called Opportunity Open Market that allowed software developers to transfer to new teams after each quarterly release in their agile product development cycle. After each release, they held an internal job fair and advertised internal opportunities. Existing managers were not allowed to veto transfers, which offered individuals the opportunity to move freely inside the company. The pilot was so successful and popular with employees and managers that the program was implemented across the broader company. Practice number 10, integrate practices with the business metrics. When Rick DeRick of the Dutch consultancy firm Leadership Natives was working on a leadership development program with the global bank ABN AMRO, they went beyond a set of competencies and training programs. They began by correlating the multiplier traits with the new leadership language that had been defined by ABN AMRO. Finding a 96% overlap, multipliers became the new training method to achieve their desired leadership language. In training programs, participants created a business leadership plan that connected the multiplier behavior with their business impact goals and key performance indicators. These business leadership plans were then tied to the corporate strategy to establish clear lines of sight between the most critical business metrics and the leadership behaviors that would enable these outcomes. When the impact of their pilot program was measured, they found a 163% return on investment. The practices just described are by no means an exhaustive list or a one-size-fits-all program. They are offered as examples of purposeful action taken to imbue a set of mindsets and practices into an organization, which can permeate the surface layer of culture and create a strong foundation for an intelligent organization, one that isn't just an aggregation of smart people, but a team with collective brilliance. Building momentum. It is a commonly held belief that change, especially cultural change, must start at the top and with the top executives. While it is prudent for cultural norms to cascade from the top, as is the case at AT&T, it isn't the only strategy. My colleagues and I have noticed that most successful implementations typically start in the middle. Here's why. When middle managers experiment with the multipliers' mindsets and practices inside their organizations, they produce pockets of success, anomalies that catch the attention of senior executives and corporate staffers who are highly adept at detecting variances, both negative and positive. When senior executives notice positive outcomes, they're quick to elevate and endorse the new practices, in turn spreading the practices to other parts of the organization. In other words, most senior executives are adept at spotting a parade and getting out in front of it. Incidentally, this is one of several executive skills you won't find documented on any official leadership competency model. If you don't yet have the political capital to lead a company-wide initiative, run a pilot with a few rising middle managers. Shine a spotlight on their success and let the practices spread to their peers. Expose their good work to the executive team and make yourself available to turn the parade into a movement. Whatever starting point you choose is inconsequential compared to how you will sustain the momentum you've generated. Unfortunately, most new initiatives, be they corporate change initiatives or personal improvement plans, begin with a bang, but fizzle out in what I call the failure to launch cycle. Instead, start small and build a series of successive wins. Each win provides the energy needed to carry the work into the next phase. These series of wins generate the energy and collective will needed to complete the cycle of success. As that cycle spins, nascent beliefs become more deeply entrenched, and old survival strategies get supplanted by new methods to not just survive, but thrive inside the organization. Lastly, you can also draw on the power of community as a way to spark and sustain momentum, especially when you encounter setbacks. As like-minded leaders gather in tribes, they create a safe space to experiment with new practices and incubate the successes that can grow into cultural legends. A tribe can also provide the positive peer pressure to sustain momentum. The most successful participants of the 30-day challenge worked collectively or had a partner who served as both a sounding board and an accountability point. You might start by finding a couple of colleagues or friends who read this book and want to take the challenge. You might then create an online learning community. Or you may choose to join a community of leaders around the world who aspire to lead like a multiplier. By joining forces with a community, you need not have all the answers or even all the questions. You can look to the genius of the group to guide you. The Multiplier Effect Revisited. When my colleagues and I teach the multiplier ideas to teams and organizations, we often ask our classes, "Does any of this matter? How does leading like a multiplier matter to you, to your organization, or even to the world at large?" Let's consider each in turn. First, it matters to you because people will give you more. My research showed consistently that even high-performing people gave multipliers 2 times more than they gave their diminishing counterparts. People don't give a little more. They give a lot more. They give all of their discretionary effort and mental energy. They dig deep and access reserves of brain power that they may not even know exist. They apply the full measure of their intelligence. They reason more clearly, comprehend more completely, and learn more quickly. In the process, they get smarter and more capable. Your people will give you more, and in return, they get a richly satisfying experience. Exhausting but exhilarating captures what people continually told us it was like to work for a multiplier. One woman said, "It was exhausting, but I was always ready to do it again. It's not a burnout experience, it's a build-up experience." As you become more of a multiplier, people will flock to you because you will be the boss to work for. You will become a talent magnet, attracting and developing talent, while providing extraordinary returns to the company as well as to your direct reports. Second, it matters to the organization you work for. Many organizations face the double whammy of new challenges and insufficient resources. Perhaps you can relate to one startup that experienced years of extraordinary growth. Their strategy had been to throw people at the problem. But as their growth declined, they had to try to outperform their market without adding headcount. Suddenly, resource leverage was as strategically important as resource allocation. A leader in a Fortune 500 company recently shared with us that in one particular division, 1 in 3 of his people was utilized below the 20% level. Organizations led by multipliers can more than double the capability of their people and hence their organizations. This is a particularly timely message. In down markets and times of scarcity, managers seek ways to get increased capability and productivity from current resources. Corporations and organizations need managers who can migrate from the logic of addition where more resources are required to handle the increased demands, to the logic of multiplication, where leaders can more fully extract capability from their current resources. Resource leverage has the power of relevancy. It is timely, and it is also timeless. It is timeless because even in times of abundance and growth, companies need leaders capable of multiplying the intelligence and capability of their colleagues and increasing the brain power of the organization to support growth demands. In down markets or growth markets, leading like a multiplier matters to the organization you work for. Third, leading like a multiplier matters to the world at large. Albert Einstein is credited with saying, "The significant problems we face cannot be solved at the same level of thinking we were at when we created them." What if we could access twice the levels of available intelligence and channel it to our perennial problems? What solutions could be generated if we could access the underutilized brain power in the world? Surely we need leaders who can extract and utilize all available intelligence to solve our most complex and vital challenges. We need more than just geniuses at the top of our organizations. We need genius makers. Genius or genius maker? When Philippe Petit illegally connected a tightrope wire between the 1,368-foot Twin Towers in New York City, he still had the chance to change his mind. The moment of truth came later, when he stood with one foot perched on the building and another on the wire in front of him. The wire was bouncing up and down from the airflow between the buildings. His weight was still on his back leg. Recall how Petit described that critical moment as he stood on the edge overlooking the chasm. "I had to make a decision of shifting my weight from one foot anchored to the building to the foot anchored on the wire. Something I could not resist called me out on that cable." He shifted his weight and took the first step. At the conclusion of this book, you might feel like Petit, with one foot anchored to the building of the status quo and the other foot anchored to the wire of change. You could remove your foot from the wire, lean back, and continue to lead the way that you have in the past. Or you can shift your weight onto that wire and lead more like a multiplier. Inertia will keep you on the building, where it is comfortable and safe. But for many of us, there is also a force pulling us out onto that wire and to a more impactful and fulfilling way of leading others. Leading like a multiplier is a choice we encounter daily, or perhaps in every moment. What choices are you making? How will these choices affect what the people around you become? Is it possible that the choice you make about how you lead can impact not just your team, or even your immediate sphere of influence, but generations to come? A single accidental diminisher turned multiplier can have a profound and far-reaching impact in a world where the challenges are great and full intelligence is underutilized. It seems possible that there are diminisher assumptions holding whole businesses back. What could happen if one aspiring multiplier introduced people around them to these ideas? What would happen if an organization currently operating on 50% of its intelligence moved to 100%? When accidental diminishers become multipliers, they are like Sir Galahad, whose strength was as the strength of 10. This is because multipliers are the key to everyone else's intelligence. A multiplier is the key to unlocking capability. A single multiplier matters. It is plausible that diminisher assumptions are underlying failing schools. What would transpire at one school if one principal learned to lead like a multiplier and found ways to give teachers, parents, and students greater ownership for the success of the school? What if these students and teachers learned and adopted these new assumptions together? How would families be transformed if parents led like multipliers in their homes? Many governments are suffocating, even collapsing. Is it possible for our civic leaders to seed challenges and then turn to the community for answers? Could answers to our most vexing challenges be found through rigorous debate and the extraction of the full intelligence of the community? Could diminishing leaders be replaced by true multipliers, inspiring collective intelligence and capability on a mass scale? I believe that the diminishing cultures we see in organizations, schools, and even families are not inevitable. Indeed, in the last analysis, diminishing cultures may simply be unsustainable. To the extent that these cultures are based on incorrect assumptions, they violate the truth about how people work and thrive. Like many historical empires, they will eventually collapse. It may be that the only institutions left standing in turbulent times are those that know how to harvest the abundance of intelligence available and operate on multiplier assumptions. Finally, the way you choose to lead not only matters for the type of organizations we build and for the people you lead, it can matter for you as well. It will shape how you think about yourself, and it will define the legacy you leave. How do you want to be remembered as a leader? Someone with a big personality? Or someone around whom other people grew? To be a multiplier, you don't need to shrink. To grow people around you, you need to play in a way that invites others to play big. I think you'll find that as you bring out the best in others, you also bring out the best in yourself. We began this inquiry with an intriguing observation about two political leaders, paraphrased by Bono, musician and global activist. He said, "It has been said that after meeting with the great British Prime Minister William Ewart Gladstone, you left feeling he was the smartest person in the world. But after meeting with his rival, Benjamin Disraeli, you left thinking you were the smartest person." The observation captures the essence and the power of a multiplier. Perhaps you stand with one foot on the building and the other on the wire, deciding whether to shift your weight and take that first step. The choice matters. Which will you be, a genius or a genius maker? Chapter 9 Summary. Becoming a multiplier. Starting the journey. Number 1, resonance. Number 2, realization of the accidental diminisher. Number 3, resolve to be a multiplier. The accelerators. Number 1, start with the assumptions. Number 2, work the extremes. Neutralize a weakness, top off a strength. Number 3, run an experiment. Number 4, ask a colleague. Number 5, brace yourself for setbacks. Elements of a culture. Common language. Words and phrases that hold a common meaning within a community based on opinions, principles, and values. Learned behaviors. A set of learned responses to stimuli. Shared beliefs. The acceptance of something is true. Heroes and legends. People who are admired or idealized for their qualities, behavior, and/or achievements, and the stories told about heroic actions. Rituals and norms. Consistent behavior regularly followed by an individual or group. Building a multiplier culture. For the cultural element, common language, the multiplier practices are: Number 1, hold a book talk. Number 2, discuss accidental diminishers. For the cultural element, learned behaviors, the multiplier practices are: Number 3, introduce multiplier mindsets. Number 4, teach multiplier skills. Number 5, fuse multipliers with daily decisions. For the cultural element, shared beliefs, the multiplier practice is: Number 6, codify a leadership ethos. For the cultural element, heroes and legends, the multiplier practices are: Number 7, spotlight multiplier moments. Number 8, measure managers. For the cultural element, rituals and norms, the multiplier practices are: Number 9, pilot a multiplier practice. Number 10, integrate practices with business metrics. Acknowledgements. It should be obvious by now that this book is the work of many people, not just one or two. I'm indebted to so many people and would like to thank everyone who's offered insights and put their thumbprint on this work. The first group is perhaps the least obvious and the most essential. The nominators. The original people we interviewed who told us of their experiences working with the multipliers and diminishers throughout their careers. And the dozens of people who shared their experiences and strategies for dealing with diminishing bosses. The Witness Protection Program requires that I don't list their names, but they know who they are. This book exists because they have shared their experiences and insights. Of course, there are the multipliers who allowed us to study them and who have shared their stories, and Appendix C, the multipliers in the PDF, lists these. These leaders and the other rock stars whose stories I couldn't fit into the book were a constant inspiration. It is my hope that their way of leadership inspires countless more leaders like them. Next, the book was made stronger by a team of reviewers who read early versions of the book and helped polish the ideas. Your comments kept me on track and kept me going. For the first edition, a big shout out goes to Yvette Allen, Shannon Calhoun, Sally Crawford, Margie Duffy, Peter Fortenbaugh, Holly Goodlift, Sebastian Gunningham, Rana Gupta, John Hall, Kristen Hansen, Jade Coyle, Matt McCauley, Stu McLennan, Justin McEwen, Sue Nelson, Todd Paletta, Ben Putterman, Gordon Rudow, Stefan Schaefer, Lisa Shively, Stan Slapp, Hilary Samorjai, John Samorjai, Fronda Stringer-Wiseman, Alana Tendowski, Gurian Tai, Mike Thornberry, Jake White, Alan Wilkins, Beth Wilkins, John Wiseman, Britton Worthen, and Bruce and Pam Worthen. For the second edition, my thanks goes out to Ellen Gorbanoff, Deborah Keep, Dustin Lewis, Rob Maines, Eunice Nichols, Ryan Nichols, Ben Putterman, and Andrew Wilhelms. There were several people who went so far and above the role of reviewer that I need to broadcast a special thank you to them. These folks offered new ideas, interesting stories, voluntary rewrites, plus good old-fashioned moral support. If this were a crime scene investigation, the following people would have more than thumbprints on the work. Their DNA would be all over it. Jesse Anderson, Heidi Brandau, Amy Hayes Stellhorn, Mike Lambert, Matt Lobaugh, Greg Powell, Gaudi Shamia, and Christine Westerlin. For the second edition, the following individuals are master practitioners of multipliers and offered insights, examples, reviews, and more. Heidi Brandau, Rick DeRick, Rob DeLange, Jennifer Dreyer, Elise Foster, Alyssa Gallagher, John Haverly, Hazel Jackson, Megan Lambert, and Jeffrey Ong. And I owe a particular debt to my mother and on-demand editor, Lois Allen. For both the first and the second edition, she pretended this was just another high school term paper and reviewed every word and fixed countless errors so that others could review the ideas without being distracted. Mom, you continue to make me better. The following people offered critical data analysis for our numerical surveys. Jared Wilson and Jim Mortensen of BYU, Crystal Hughes, Derek Murphy and Josh Sheets at the Booth Company, and Chad Foster, a brilliant engineer who so readily and generously shares his native genius with us. Credit for the graphics work goes to the brilliant team at Big Monocle and to Anthony Gamble. I was fortunate to land a highly experienced and collaborative publishing team at HarperCollins. While many authors feel beat up, I felt built up by the team. This was made possible by my insightful editor, Hollis Heimbach. Hollis, thank you for getting it instantly, for guiding me, and for so deeply embracing what it means to be a multiplier in your own work. And thanks to Matthew Inman and Stephanie Hitchcock and the team at HarperCollins for your diligent labors on behalf of this book. To Shannon Marvin, my agent at Dupree Miller, thanks for signing up with us and for your tenacity and for making this all possible. There are a few people whose role has been much broader than just this book that I must acknowledge. I have been fortunate to have many great mentors who have let me borrow their minds and see the world through their most brilliant lens. Here are a few who have shaped my views and who have influenced this book profoundly. The late Dr. C.K. Prahalad, a great management thinker, taught me the importance of reaching deep into an organization for intelligence and how to build collective intent. C.K. encouraged these ideas, helped me unearth the core assumptions, and guided the book in many ways. I have always been proud just to be C.K.'s student, and I'm now proud to be among those who continue his work and honor his legacy. Dr. J. Bonner Ritchie, professor and peace broker, early on shared with me and each of his students his insatiable intellectual curiosity and inspired us to truly embrace ambiguity. Ray Lane, an extraordinary business leader, taught me how to lead and was a multiplier to me and so many others. Carrie Patterson, writer and great teacher, raised my sights and encouraged me to write this book, not just for corporate managers, but for leaders all across the world. Carrie, thank you for coaching and pushing me harder, even when it involved a good beating. My sincere appreciation goes to my early collaborator and thought partner, Greg McEwen. This book is better thanks to his fanatical need for clarity, high aspirations, and relentless pursuit of truth in all he does. Thank you for being instrumental in this journey. This second edition would not be possible without the brilliant team at the Wiseman Group. Karina Wilhelms has served as project manager, editor, and idea partner through every step in the process. Her ability to think deeply and move quickly while keeping her cool inspires me every single day. The team was completed by Alyssa Gallagher, who conducted research and contributed an important update of the multiplier experiments. Sean Vanderhoven, who contributed critical thinking for Chapter 9 and who lent his brilliance to the graphics work. Judy Jung, who managed the entire interview process and who makes it possible for me to continue teaching and learning. And Heidi Brandau, who not only contributed ideas and reviews, but also spent the last 5 years teaching practitioners around the world how to teach managers how to be multiplier leaders, a role that she has played brilliantly and passionately. Thank you all for challenging me and making work a pleasure. My deepest appreciation goes to my husband, Larry, for believing in this project from day one, for guarding my space to work like a watchdog, and for making me feel like a genius every day of my life. To each of these people I've named, thank you. Thank you for so generously contributing your time, your energy, and bringing forth these ideas. It is my hope that I've done justice with what you've given me. Appendix A, the research process. Here you will find a detailed account of the research conducted to study the differences between diminishers and multipliers. We outline the research process in four phases. 1, the foundation work for the research. 2, the research itself. 3, the development of the multiplier model. And 4, the research for dealing with diminishers. Phase 1, the foundation. Research team. While Greg and I were the primary members of the research team, C.K. Prahalad served as an important informal research advisor. While many people contributed to the research in the book, our core was as follows. Liz Wiseman, Master of Organizational Behavior, Marriott School of Management, Brigham Young University. Greg McEwen, Master of Business Administration, Stanford Graduate School of Business. C.K. Prahalad, Paul and Ruth McCracken, Distinguished University Professor of Corporate Strategy at the Ross School of Business of the University of Michigan. Research question. Through an iterative process, we refined our research question to this one, which has two parts. What are the vital few differences between intelligence diminishers and intelligence multipliers? And what impact do they have on organizations? A contrast is inherent in this question. We reasoned that it wasn't enough to study multipliers. As Jim Collins has explained, if you studied exclusively gold medalists at the Olympics, you might erroneously conclude that they won because they all had coaches. It is only by contrasting winners with the people who lost that you realize that everyone had a coach. And so having a coach cannot be the active ingredient in winning. We were looking for the active ingredients or differentiating factors. Definition of key terms. To be able to answer our research question, we first defined our three key terms: diminisher, multiplier, and intelligence. Diminisher. A person who led an organization or management team that operated in silos, found it hard to get things done, and despite having smart people, seemed to not be able to do what it needed to do to reach its goals. Multiplier. A person who led an organization or management team that was able to understand and solve hard problems rapidly, achieve its goals, and adapt and increase its capacity over time. Intelligence. In our literature review, we found a paper that identified more than 70 definitions of intelligence. One paper that was important to us throughout the research process was signed by 52 researchers in 1994. They agreed that intelligence was the ability to reason, plan, solve problems, think abstractly, comprehend complex ideas, learn quickly, and learn from experience. It is not narrow. It is a broader and deeper capability for comprehending our surroundings, catching on, making sense of things, or figuring out what to do. Beyond this, we included the ability to adapt to new environments, learn new skills, and accomplish difficult tasks. Industry selection. Having first observed the diminisher multiplier phenomenon at Oracle, a software company, we opted to research this phenomenon in other companies within the broader technology industry. These companies included biotech, Affymetrics, online retailing, Amazon, consumer electronics, Apple, networking and communications, Cisco, internet search, Google, microprocessors, Intel, computer software, Microsoft, enterprise software applications, SAP. Phase 2, the research. Nominators. Instead of trying to identify diminishers and multipliers ourselves, we found people who would nominate these leaders for us. We used two criteria in the selection of our nominators. The first was that they should be a successful professional. It was important that these individuals had positive career experiences to draw from. We reasoned that interviewing people who had an axe to grind could skew the data. The second criterion was that these nominators have approximately 10 years management experience themselves. We wanted practical insights from people who had grappled with challenges of leading others. It is worth noting that nominators at many of the above companies pointed us to both multipliers and diminishers they had worked with at entirely different companies and often industries. Researcher-administered survey. We asked the nominators to rate the multipliers and diminishers they had identified on a 5-point scale against 48 leadership practices. We designed the list to be comprehensive, drawing upon standard competency models, popular leadership frameworks, and practices we hypothesized would differentiate diminishers from multipliers. The survey included skills, for example, focuses on the customer, demonstrates intellectual curiosity, develops the talent of the team, and business acumen, as well as mindsets, for example, sees their role as a primary thought leader, and sees intelligence as continually developing. We collected the results of this survey and analyzed the data in several ways. We looked for the largest deltas between multipliers and diminishers, the top skills and mindsets of multipliers, and the skills most correlated with the top mindsets of multipliers and diminishers. Structured interviews. In the original interviews with the nominators, we followed a structured format. We used the same questions in the same order to minimize context effects, or at least hold them constant, so we could ensure reliable aggregation and comparison of the answers we received across different interviews and timeframes. All the interviews were conducted between October 2007 and October 2009. With the first round taking place in 2007. The interviews averaged between 60 and 90 minutes and were conducted in person or by telephone. We kept written transcripts of all the conversations so we would have a permanent record of quotations and examples. While we followed a structured format, we allowed ourselves some latitude in determining how much time to devote to each question. Our typical format for an interview kept to the following narrative structure. Number one, identification of two leaders, one who stifled intelligence and the other who amplified it. Number two, identification of an experience or story working with each leader. Number three, context for working with diminisher, experience and setting. Number four, impact on nominator, percentage of nominator's capability used. Number five, impact on group, role played in group process, perception in broader organization. Number six, leader's actions, what was done or not done to impact others. Number seven, result of actions, outcomes, deliverables accomplished. Number eight, repeat questions 3 through 7 for the nominated multiplier. In-depth interviews. We conducted a second round of interviews to gather more information about the strongest multipliers. This included A, interviews with the multipliers themselves, B, second interviews with the nominators to gather greater detail and understanding, and C, an in-depth 360 process interviewing both former and current members of the multipliers management team. Industry expansion. As we extended our research to eventually include 144 different leaders, we found more examples within our original target companies, added more companies within the technology and biotech industries, and went beyond these industries entirely to include others in the for-profit sector, as well as nonprofits and government agencies. Our research journey took us across 4 continents and introduced us to a rich and diverse set of leaders. See Appendix C, the multipliers, in the included PDF. The following is a list of organizations where we studied multipliers. In order to provide confidentiality, we are not publishing the list of companies where we studied diminishers. Biotech, Hexel, Affymetrix. Green Tech, Bloom Energy, and Better Place. Education, Stanford University, and Vital Smarts. Entertainment, DreamWorks Studios. Government, the White House, and Israeli Army. Manufacturing, GM Daewoo, and Flextronics. Nonprofit, Boys and Girls Club of the Peninsula, Greenbelt Movement, Benyon Center, and Unitas. Private Equity and Venture Capital, Advent International, Kleiner Perkins Caulfield Byers. Professional Services, Bain & Company, and McKinsey & Company. Retailing, Gap, Land's End, and Gymboree. Sports, Highland High School Rugby, and North Carolina State University Women's Basketball Program. Technology, Amazon, Apple, Cisco, Infosys Technologies, Hewlett-Packard, Intel, Intuit, Microsoft, SAP, and Salesforce. Workers' Unions, Self-Employed Women's Association, or SEWA. Phase 3, the model. We gathered approximately 400 pages of interview transcripts, read them multiple times, and collated them for cross-interview analysis. We then took this theme analysis and calibrated it against the quantitative data we had gathered from the leadership survey. Finally, we adhered to a disciplined and rigorous debate methodology for crafting each of the disciplines that eventually became chapters for this book. Both Greg and I claim to have been severely beaten up by each other during this debate process. We hope the research is stronger for it. Phase 4, dealing with diminishers. While the original research for this book was conducted in 2007 through 2009, the research for Chapter 8, dealing with diminishers, was conducted in 2016. The goal of the research was to better understand the depth and breadth of impact caused by diminishers and to ascertain strategies for minimizing the damaging, reductive effect of these diminishers. The research was conducted by Liz Wiseman, Karina Wilhelms, Alyssa Gallagher, and Jared Wilson, all of the Wiseman Group. The research comprised the following. In-depth interviews. I conducted 24 interviews with successful professionals to understand how to survive and potentially thrive under diminishing boss